On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR, Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. On the Commons with me today is a little leprechaun from Ireland, and we're going to be celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Our phone line is open. The number here is 703-560-8255. So if you'd like to jump in and call, we'd love to have you join us. And looks like we already have a caller here. Hello, how are you? Hello? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, well, I've had better days, but I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Yes. We have Frank Short in the studio with us.
Good, I need some free legal advice. Well, actually, it's all about Virginia corporation statutes. I apparently have a problem with CAI National, and I'm a member of this group, and I'm assuming, for the purposes of this question, that CAI is incorporated in the state of Virginia as a nonprofit corporation, and I kind of wanted to find out what my rights of inspection are as a member.
I'm not sure whether CAI is incorporated in Virginia or not.
Neither am I. Maybe I should find that out.
That would be a good starting point.
Okay.
What would you like to inspect?
Well, I had a strange thing happen. I've been a member of CAI off and on since the mid-80s, and I've never been a problem for them. As a matter of fact, I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars and used their educational resources, and while I'm kind of somewhere in no man's land between advocacy and being the enemy, according to the at least some of the experts of CAI, apparently we at homeowner advocates or educated consumers are the enemy of CAI. I had no clue when I first joined, but in any event, I've gotten some messages on what they call the CAI legislative action listserv, and I have never had a problem, but apparently I ask a question. I ask someone in Arizona to further identify themselves before I ask questions about what's going on in Arizona. And I got a message from the Director of Government and Public Affairs at CAI, Andy Kirkowski, asking me to take my conversation offline, which, of course, you know, would have been done, but I didn't even post anything, really. So in any event, I get the impression from other members that I've been removed from CAI's list, CERB. So I thought, well, what in the world? I didn't do anything. So I sent a message to Andy a long time ago and asked him, you know, why I was removed or what's going on. And he said, I get this message on Thursday that says, I apologize for the delay in responding to your message. Very simply, you have been removed from the discussion group due to repeated disruptive and incendiary postings. We didn't want to have to do this. We don't like to restrict the privileges of any member, but you left us little choice. I don't even know who us is. But anyway, this is the best part at the end, and I won't bore you with the whole thing, but he says, there are opportunities for reasonable debate of community association issues, both through CAI and via other communication venues. This list is not intended to be one of them. Well, excuse me, you know what I did after he told me not to ask a poster if they were the same person that, you know, I was familiar with from Arizona? He said, you know, I really don't know what's going on, but I really don't think Andy has any clue how serious these allegations are being taken. My first response as a disgruntled malcontent member of CAI was, wah! then my second response was, I have to fight these false allegations, because even in HOA hell, you usually get a chance to present your side of an issue. And
I was tried
and convicted, and I didn't even get a warning of that I did anything wrong, because, quite frankly, I didn't do a thing.
But that would be like due process.
Yeah, I love that due process thing. As a matter of fact, I heard that word at the last law seminar. And for crying out loud, that was the sixth seminar that I had been to in a row. And I know Andy doesn't have a clue what he's done and how. I mean, the reason I asked the question about inspecting the records was, if there are allegedly, I've been removed because I posted repeated and incendiary postings, that's a bunch of funk. Pure garbage. It didn't happen. I'm sorry, go ahead, Shu. I'm a little emotional right now, but I did contact their, I don't know what his title is. I think his name is Frank, too. What? Isn't it? Maybe that's a sign, Frank.
Oh, Frank Rashbon?
Yes, I did contact Frank because I had a lovely dinner with Frank at the expo, that big gala thing. I sat at the same table with Frank and found him to be quite charming. You know, he rushed off when the balloons didn't drop like they were supposed to, which maybe for me is a sign. But anyway, long story short, Frank sent me this great message back that says, you know, I reminded Andy about your problem, and, you know, this isn't my job, basically. And, you know, I can't even believe it. He's the communications director or something. So God knows we're all too busy to deal with these sorts of little problems, but, you know,
Vice President.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He's Vice President of Communications.
He's the Vice President of Communications, I guess. You're right. I have no idea why this is happening, but I have to kind of wonder why they're worried about some little housewife member being a threat, if that's it, because I know I'm probably the biggest whiner on the planet, but I have vowed to drag my little soapbox around like a ball and chain to every single state and let the legislators know exactly why we don't have a voice and how we were supposed to have a voice when this whole process started out 30 years ago, and we're all the stakeholder groups were supposed to have an equal voice before anything went to the legislature. I don't know. I'm being criticized for promoting Evan McKenzie's book Privatopia, but I love the chapter about the formation of CAI, and I don't agree with all their policies, obviously. But, and I have to be careful because I really do want to continue to take advantage of the educational resources. But I'm just kind of at a loss. And I have to say, Frank, speaking of Evan McKenzie, I don't know about you, but it warms the cockles of my heart to see another lawyer make statements like this, that the HOA practice, that the practice is being, this is about foreclosures. Evan says, the practice is being abused by a small number of collection attorneys who have invaded the field of community association law, but who, in reality, wouldn't recognize, quote, community if it walked up and bit them on the butt. These folks are
No. Can you say butt on this show, Sue? I mean, I don't know.
These folks are the HOA version of divorce lawyers. Oh, my goodness.
We're a used car salesman.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I do have a poll at the Harris poll. I don't know if I sent you that. That's only 25% of Americans polled. Apparently, or trust lawyers, and that is way below used car salesmen.
What's going on here?
You're a good lawyer, but did you ever notice how 99% of the lawyers make the good ones look bad?
Yes, but what we have here is not a problem with lawyers per se. We have a problem with the trade association that purports to speak for homeowners. And that's like saying that the American Association of Funeral Directors is the right group to advance the interests of bereaved families. These people want to make money from community associations, and your homes are something that they regard as items which should exist as security for their fees.
YouTube beads.
And that, unfortunately, has got to stop. Now, legislatures around the country are beginning to, to recognize that that CAI really doesn't speak for homeowners. They never have.
I heard one very high-profile attorney in Washington, D.C., speak about a legislator in Arizona, and he said that he was either a liar or he was just plain stupid, and this was referring to Representative Eddie Farnsworth. And he said it in front of another lawyer, and the arrogance is, I mean, that will be their undoing. I think Evan was commenting on that at the Las Vegas Law Seminar that, you know, there are a small percentage of lawyers, and I hate to tell them, but they are in the tent with CAI,
and
some of them. And they're,
you know,
It's bad. It's really bad.
What we're being able to do now with the internet is every time that, you know, there's an incident and CAI wants to characterize it as an isolated incident, we're able to show a couple of things. Number one, it's not isolated. It's part of a pattern. It's part of a national pattern. And number two, we're able to use the internet and go back and track the law firms and the management companies involved in the incident. And you know what?
What?
We're finding that these things are CAI-affiliated management companies and law firms.
Well, but you know what, Frank? I was
You know, the Winona Blevins down in Houston.
Right.
Guess who the management company was affiliated with?
Oh.
Guess who the law firm was affiliated with? And again and again and again, that's what we're finding.
Well, Molly
As Evan McKenzie has pointed out, the industry has failed to discipline the abuses perpetuated by its own members. And that's why Evan's point is that unless or until they start to do that, they're going to continue to go right off the edge. And we're going to continue to point out every time we find that there's a CAI law firm associated with these things, I'm going to make a point of noting that it, you know, this is a CAI-affiliated firm. Management company, law firm, whatever.
Right. Well, Wayne Hyatt's keynote address at the luncheon on Friday during the law seminar last month was about bringing professionalism back to the practice of community association law. I was probably the only one in the room that was taking notes, and I mean, I couldn't believe it, but I think I would never speak for Wayne Hyatt, obviously, but I think his message was something like, we better clean up our act, because if we don't, they're going to clean it up for us. And as far as bad press, Molly Foley Healy, who was involved, I mean, she's the chief federal lobbyist, but was on this, she was the panel moderator on the session that Evan did on CAI's rights and responsibilities, and she was talking about the Winona Blevins case and the bad publicity and all those things, and I had to raise my hand and make a comment that I want to read those stories. I want the press to cover every single case, because if even one more elderly person loses their home because of some pedophager, or I don't care if he's affiliated with CAI or not, I want to read about it. And perhaps I should be a social worker in my next life, but I think it's obscene that even one person lost their home. And we all know the Winona Blevins thing was a huge misunderstanding, apparently.
Right.
But I did hear someone, I'm not going to mention any names, but at CAI National in Washington, D.C., a female mention when they were talking about the legislative updates, and Scott Carpenter was in that session as well from Arizona, say that these people, these advocates, these people that she has claimed she personally talked to are irrational. Well, you know what? I was sitting there, and I was probably one of the only people that was a homeowner member that came to the 30th annual gala exposition and conference, but I'm tired of the name-calling, and after her session that she did with Evan, I said, you know what? The name-calling has got to stop. It's got to stop with Mr. Ramsey quoting nattering nabobs of negativism. It's got to stop with all those people who look at all of us, and I may be pretty emotional and pretty passionate, and I'm pretty upset right now with Andy Krakowski, but I think that there's an even bigger problem, and Evan tried to tell CAI that their rights and responsibilities really does need to include the industry professionals. And
well, their rights and responsibilities are a joke. Their rights and responsibilities aren't worth the paper they're printed on. You know,
I disagree. Sorry. You know what? Because they give me the right to inspect documents, and that's why I'm being sued, Frank.
You don't have to rely on a CAI policy position.
Oh, I know, but
for your right to inspect documents.
My association is suing me because I tried to exercise my right to inspect documents. I mean, you know what, Frank? When we were in Washington, D.C., we put the fact patterns out there during a session called Shop Talk. My attorney was also present. And these CAI best and brightest said, well, here's your amicus team. Well, guess what? When he requested an amicus brief on an issue previously and at great expense to me personally, they told him to go jump in the lake. And the reason was because it involved my association, where probably $2 million will end up being spent in these cases in legal fees, in just one Rural Illinois Association, is a member of CAI. And I'll tell you what, most of the board members have never even heard of CAI. They're clueless.
CAI is pretty insignificant, much more insignificant than they'd like to believe.
Well,
and I think Frank has a bunch of stuff that he wanted to talk about.
Let me give you some suggested places to look. If they're chartered in Virginia, they probably are because that's where their national headquarters is. You want to look at the Non-Stock Corporation Act of Virginia. And within the Virginia Code, the Non-Stock Corporation Act, corporate records provisions, there are several. I'll give you the section numbers. 13.1-932 is the general provision on corporate records.
Okay.
13.1-933 addresses inspection of records by members.
Okay.
13.1-934 goes on to address the scope of the inspection right. Note that it provides that corporation may impose a reasonable charge covering the costs of labor and material for copies of any documents provided to the member. The cost may not exceed the estimated cost of production or reproduction of the records. If you don't want them to copy anything for you, if all you want to do is go in and see it.
Well, I want to see what information they relied on to remove me from their list. Allegedly, I had done all these things wrong when I know it doesn't exist. But I want to see the records or I want an apology in writing from the national office.
Right. Well, anyway, those are the places that I would start in the Virginia Code.
Just out of curiosity, how many emails did you send out on the list?
Well, you know what? I think I just asked this one person in Arizona if it was the same person, and I might have posted a couple of that. I mean, absolutely nothing that had anything to do with anything. I mean, nothing.
So you were not bombarding the list with emails six times a day then?
Absolutely not. No, we're talking about this whole listserv shoe is supposed to be reserved only for legislative issues. And what they've what has happened is that they've been using it, some of the members across the country have been using it to ask questions that relate, absolutely don't have anything, that's not related to legislation in any state whatsoever. And that's why what I think the problem was is I tried to send all these messages that were as irrelevant as mine were, but not offensive, to Andy. And so I just kept forwarding him, and he finally writes me a message that says, stop sending me these messages. Don't send them to me. And I was like, that's the only thing I did that could have possibly upset Andy enough to remove me. But I don't know. I just like to know who participated in the decision to remove me from the list when there are very few benefits that I do think CAI has that are important to me as a homeowner because they obviously aren't advocating our interests. By the way, Frank, if you look at their advertising and their recruiting stuff, they promise to be there for you. They tell you you're going to be among friends. They tell you they're working for every single homeowner and every single association. And I'll tell you what, this has really put a bad taste in my mouth. And it's, you know, I know everybody that hasn't ever been a member is very, anti-CAI. But I have never been anti-CAI because I have enjoyed being in the tent with all of them and hearing all these little things like a fly on the wall. And I don't know, maybe someday we need to all collaborate on that book and put it all together. But my working title right now is Confessions of a PIA. So I'm thinking that maybe CAI had a huge opportunity to bring those 50 million Americans who could be members of CAI into their fold.
Well, they can't do that, MJ. They really cannot bring all the homeowners in on it.
Then why are they trying? Why are they recruiting us, if they're not going to advocate our interests?
They're not.
They want your money. That's it. They want your money, and that's all they want.
They want your money, and they don't want you to have any power because there are more of us than there are of them.
Why don't we all join and take it over like they tell us to do in our own community?
Why do we want to take it over?
Well, then we need our own organization.
We need our own organization
for homeowners to speak for homeowners because nobody is doing it for us.
We need the homeowners to wake up to what's happening, and it goes way beyond CAI. They're just a tiny little microcosm in what's happening. But, MJ, we've got a whole program planned here.
Well, thanks, you guys. And I hope I get to see you, because I already told Frank I'm headed to Washington, D.C. to inspect those records. So I'll hope to see you then.
Well, anytime you're in town.
Okay,
when you inspect records, make sure that you tell them that we said hello.
Okay, I will. Hey, maybe you can come with me. Hey, you want to be my attorney for a day, Frank? I'll give you some of Kevlar suit.
I don't think they'd let me in the CAI building.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
Right, bye.
Thanks for calling in, MJ.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, Frank, rights and responsibilities, kind of gentler association. What else are we looking at here?
Yeah, let's give everybody an update on House Bill 894 here in the Virginia legislature. We were in here a couple of weeks ago with Pia Trigiani, who's a CAI-affiliated attorney, part of the Virginia Legislative Action Committee for CAI. And we talked a little bit about House Bill 894. It has now passed both the House and the Senate. It's on its way to the governor's desk. This bill would require homeowners associations to make available draft minutes of the board meetings to homeowners either 60 days after the date of the meeting or when the agenda packet for the next meeting is presented to members of the board of directors, whichever comes first. This is important because the original attempt in House Bill 894 was particularly draconian. It would have enabled homeowners associations to withhold any document, not just draft meeting minutes, any document from a homeowner who sought to inspect the document simply by putting a draft stamp on that document. And Shu and I and many listeners to this show called and emailed the Virginia legislature, and before it even got out of the subcommittee in the House of Delegates, that bill was changed to make it, instead of a withholding bill, a mandatory disclosure bill. So congratulations and thanks to everybody who participated.
It hasn't been signed yet.
Yeah,
right?
It hadn't been signed yet, but it has been vastly improved. And I would be very surprised if Governor Warner does not sign it. But if he doesn't, you'll hear about that too.
But Frank, you know, can we take this and expand a little bit just for half a second on this? I mean, this was headed straight for taking away homeowner rights until a handful of homeowners actually got involved.
Yes.
And we did not need CAI. We did not need an organization. We just needed to get the word out, and people actually got on the phone and got on their computers and sent in emails, and the legislature then listened, right?
Yes.
It's a good example of what can be done if people would pay attention.
And we're a lot less organized in Virginia than they are, for example, in Florida and Arizona and even Texas. You and I have had in-depth conversations with several members of the Virginia legislature. Mm-hmm. We're not the only ones in the state who have done that on issues related to homeowner associations. And the surprise that I came away with as a result of those meetings was that the legislators very often, unless they're on the committee that actually considers the bill here in Virginia, they have very little to do. There's very little quality control after a bill gets out of committee.
That's right.
And I found that disappointing. But you know, we don't have a permanent standing legislature. They're on a tough, tight schedule, and that seems to be the way it simply has to happen. The other big surprise for me, the first time that we met with Delegate Michelle McQuigg, and I explained to her how several provisions of the Property Owners Association interacted to enable a community association to send a violation notice to a homeowner on a trumped-up violation, to haul the homeowner before a kangaroo court with absolutely no due process requirements, to impose a fine on the homeowner for violating the trumped-up regulation, and then if the homeowner doesn't pay the fine, to sell the homeowner's home on the courthouse steps by non-judicial foreclosure, all without ever going before a judge in a court of competent jurisdiction in this Commonwealth. Michelle McQuigg's mouth hung open, and she said, that can't possibly be the law. And I told her, it is the law. And she said, well, there's an attorney here present in this room, and he teaches a course in community association law. And he'll tell you that couldn't possibly be the law. What happened, Jim?
Oh, well, he said, this gentleman's absolutely right. That's exactly what it means.
And we still haven't fixed it.
Well, you know what, Frank? To give Michelle McQuigg her due, the very next year she did have a bill in banning fines and banning foreclosures, period. And, of course, you know, that didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But her heart was in the right place.
And I think it still is in the right place. She's got some good language in bills before the legislature this session. She needs to be supported when she does stuff like that.
Yeah, she does need to be supported, actually. And we haven't really been all that great about supporting her. But, you know, when you have a good legislator out there, work with them. Right?
Don't assume that your legislator knows the law. You're going to have to do quite a bit of education and explanation and explaining to your legislator what it is about the law that you don't like and come up with a way to fix it. You know, I think that as a first step, the ability of homeowners associations to sell a home by non-judicial foreclosure to collect a fine, or CAI lawyers to collect attorney fees, should be thrown out. It has been thrown out in California. It has been thrown out in Texas. And sooner or later, whether CAI likes it or not, it'll be thrown out in Virginia. The next step after that will be to take away the right to fine from homeowners associations altogether and relegate them to the rights available to any other party to a contract to enforce the contract. That is, you go to a court of competent jurisdiction, you assume the burden of proof, and then you prove a violation of the contract.
I absolutely like that. You're on the commons. I think, Frank, we're going to take a short break. I think that's probably our cue to do that. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and this is our St. Patrick's Day special. See you in a couple of minutes. WBR Fairfax, Virginia. I'm Sue Bartholomew. You're on the Commons. And on the Commons with us today is Frank, and we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day. We're celebrating it early. We'll be celebrating it again next week, so I hope you'll tune in and join in. We'll be opening up the phone line in a little bit. The number here is 703-560-8255, so if you'd like to call in and talk, we'd be happy to hear from you. Frank, we're talking about collecting fees, we're talking about fines, we're talking about all kinds of things here.
Well, you know, what we have seen as we track these cases across the country, we've seen incident after incident in which a homeowner gets in trouble. The amount of pure assessment money that is owed to the homeowners association is minimal, a couple of $100 maybe.
If that.
And this becomes a federal case in which the amount that is ultimately sought by the homeowners association is in the thousands of dollars, thousands and thousands of dollars to collect a couple of hundred. And why does this become the case? Well, this becomes the case because of what's called, you see, attorney fees.
Ah.
And when we had Pia Prigiani here a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm, in the studio with me, this issue came up. And I understood her first to suggest that there was no guarantee that if the association prevailed in a case that they would get attorney fees. And I pointed out to her that that's not the law. The law under the Property Owners Association Act, Section 55.515 of the Virginia Code, expressly states that the prevailing party shall be entitled to recover reasonable attorney's fees and costs expended in the matter. So it's not a question of whether if you win, you get attorney fees. The question is, what is reasonable? And I explained to Pia that, you know, the real complaint that the association lawyers had was that they weren't getting awards from the court, that they, the HOA lawyers, considered reasonable. And I went back to my files this week, and I pulled up a May 2003 article from a CAI-affiliated law firm here in Virginia, the subject of which is recovering attorney fees in assessment collection cases. What is reasonable? And this article goes on. I'll only read portions of it because it's a fairly long article. It says here in part, the governing documents of many associations provide that in the event legal action is taken to collect delinquent assessments, the delinquent owner will be responsible for the reasonable attorney fees and costs of collection that are incurred by the association. So, we ought to stop right there for a minute.
Yeah.
That's a very bad thing to have in your governing documents, folks. If you
and
got it in there, you
sign
ought to
sign on to.
Yeah. If the association prevails, then under the Property Owners Association Act, reasonable attorney fees as awarded by the court. That's one thing.
Okay, can we expand on that? As awarded by the court does not mean that the association can go ahead and tack it on just because they feel like tacking it on?
That's right, and that's what's happening. And we're getting to tacking things on before we ever get to court. The lawyer for the association will write a letter to the homeowner and bill the association $200 or $300. And the association will try to tack that on to your assessment. And when you go and write a check to your association, unless you put in that check down in the memo line that this is for my regular, you know, March 2004 assessment, what we're finding is you write that check for the normal amount of your assessment. Let's say it's $200 this month. Well, the association will apply that check to, guess what?
The attorney letter.
Yes.
Because the attorney wants his money up front.
Yes, and then the association will tell you what?
You still owe us the money.
You still owe us the money, and in order to collect the money from you,
we're going to foreclose.
Yeah. And that's how this thing snowballs. You know, to go back to this letter, the article from the law firm, however, even if the association's authority to bring suit and collect attorney fees is clearly set forth in its governing documents, once the association's claim is submitted to the court for a decision, the court alone can decide whether the fees incurred by the association are reasonable. Shu, have you ever heard anything more shocking?
No, reasonable attorney fees in the same sentence?
I mean that the court would decide whether the fees are reasonable as opposed to just letting the lawyer who claimed the fees
to decide.
In fact, the article goes on, although most cases to collect delinquent assessments award a judgment for the full amount of the assessments and the late fees to the association, the attorney fees awarded to an association frequently fall short of the actual costs incurred by the association to bring and maintain the lawsuit against the delinquent owner. What does that mean? The costs incurred by the association are the costs as assessed by the HOA's lawyer.
That's right.
So if the lawyer doesn't get everything that he or she wants, this is a cost incurred by the association. This is terrible, Shu. The article goes on to say that judges typically award only a percentage of the debt as attorney fees. In our experience, the attorney fees awarded to an association generally range from 15% to 25% of the assessment delinquency. Well, that's telling you that you shouldn't take a $200 delinquency and turn it into Sacco and Vanzetti so you can bill $10,000 for it. That's what that means, in case you haven't picked up on it, CAI lawyers.
So
judges are telling you that when they refuse to award you ridiculous fees. Thank you, judges.
So let me see, Frank. If you owe them $200, 10 to 15%, you're looking at $40, $50. Is that what the reasonable fees are to collect that?
That's what a court, according to what this law firm article says, that's about what you could expect from a court in Fairfax County. Now, you'd get, the costs of, the filing and everything, but the attorney fees, the courts are kindly telling these trade association-affiliated attorneys, don't come in here. Don't come into my court and give me a bill for $10,000 in attorney fees, to go collect some nickel and dime debt, because I'm not going to award it. And when you advise your client on this, advise your client that these costs aren't going to be recovered from the homeowner. We're not going to hold his house for ransom so that you get your $10,000 legal fee. It's just, well beyond what this case is worth. There are other ways to collect delinquent assessments. And
well, first of all, it would seem to me that the association, quite often they don't even get in touch with the homeowners. They just turn it over to the association attorney, and before you know it, we're off and running. We're off to the races.
Well, you are exactly right, Jim. Anyway, that was point number one for the second half of the hour. There was another point that Pia made that I came out of here scratching what little hair I have about. We were talking about kangaroo courts, these association created tribunals that have the authority to fine homeowners and then to take them to non-judicial foreclosure to collect the fine. And Pia's exact words in describing these things were, well, this is alternative dispute resolution.
New way.
And, I was nonplussed by that. I mean, I have a concept of what alternative dispute resolution or mediation is,
arbitration.
And I'm sure that everybody, or arbitration, I'm sure everybody has, a concept in mind when we use terms like that. And it's a concept in which the parties stand as equals. Nobody walks in with a procedural advantage. You may have an advantage in the facts. The facts may be on your side. The law may be on your side. But the procedure, when you walk into the meeting with the other party, is a fair procedure. Under the Property Owners Association Act here in Virginia, the terms due process do not even appear. And the board of directors, or this association-created tribunal before which you're going to appear, they run the show. They make the rules for the hearing. They set forth what the rules are going to be, and they alone have a power to impose a penalty on you. Now, that's not alternative dispute resolution. It's not arbitration. It's not mediation. And what it is a kangaroo court.
I like that. There's a long article on alternative dispute resolution on my webpage. This might be a good opportunity, Frank, for me to promote my webpage.
That would be a good idea.
www.onthecommons.com. And there is a long, if anybody's sitting there going, well, gee whiz, I don't really want to hire an attorney, and I think alternative dispute resolution would be a great idea, go read that article. Or go read the thing that I wrote on there, because there's something included that Frank wrote about 10, 12 years ago.
The key to understanding arbitration, for those who are the big proponents of arbitration, is that If you go to arbitration, you are essentially entering a contract about the resolution of this dispute. And depending on what your arbitration agreement says, it may be very, very difficult for you to bring a challenge in a judicial forum if the arbitrator gets it wrong. And there's an entire line of cases out there where people went to arbitration, they weren't happy with the results, and they then sued on the basis that the arbitrator got the law wrong. And that what the courts generally say is, well, we're not going to re-examine whether the arbitrator misinterpreted the law. You agreed to be bound by the results of the arbitration, and the only way we're going to let you off the hook is if you can demonstrate fraud. The fact that the arbitrator made a mistake of law, that's too bad. You get no relief for that. So if you have a strong legal case, you really want to think twice before going to arbitration. Another thing that the trade associations out there recognized a long time ago was, they're very concerned about having bad precedent. Precedent is when courts publish opinions that are binding on other courts in future cases. And when an association gets a case that, they look at and they say, well, we really don't want this thing to go much further. Let's arbitrate, let's mediate, let's get rid of this before, God forbid, the homeowner gets in a court and this becomes a published opinion. And then the whole world knows what we did, and the opinion in the court becomes of precedental value, and we'd be punished if we did it again.
You're talking about published opinions, Frank. Sometimes courts will not publish opinions too, right? And
yes.
That's sometimes the loser. And if in this case, if it's the homeowners association loses, they can actually go to court and ask to unpublish a case, right?
Well, I don't know if they can get an opinion unpublished, but they could ask a court not to publish it, before it becomes a published opinion. I don't know where an opinion has actually been published and then.
I read about one, and it had nothing to do with associations, but it wasn't unpublished. And it had been published, and it was unpublished later. But there are a lot of cases out there that are unpublished, and what does that do for the homeowners?
Well, it makes it tougher for the homeowner to find out what the law is. And as we discussed with Pia in here a couple of weeks ago, you don't have lots and lots and lots of reported cases from the circuit courts in Virginia construing the Property Owners Association Act. Several weeks ago, we were on the phone with the attorney who won in the Supreme Court of Virginia a case called Winkleman versus Dogwood Valley
That's
Civic
right.
Association.
Yeah.
And although the Supreme Court opinion is published, you'll remember that the opinion in the circuit court out in Greene County was not published. And despite our best efforts, it was very, very difficult to find out what even the facts of this case were as it made its way all the way to the Supreme Court of Virginia. One way to do that would be to get copies of the appellate briefs that are filed with the Virginia Supreme Court, because there will be in an appellate brief a recitation of the facts and the opinion below. But what the attorney said was that although it wasn't a reported case, the judge in the case from the bench did a very good job of explaining his reasoning, entering findings of fact and conclusions of law. And those were part of the record that made its way up to the Virginia Supreme Court. That's very helpful for the litigants, but it doesn't help us as much when we're just out here in the general population trying to find out how are courts interpreting the Property Owners Association Act.
Is there anything that we as homeowners can do, do you think? Is there some way can we demand to see them, even if they're not? Because there's a lot of good information in every court case.
There's a lot of information that we have access to that exists in forms other than published court opinions. And the best example of that I can come up with is what they're doing in Houston when they tracked foreclosures in the Houston courthouse. And they associated foreclosures with particular homeowners associations, with particular law firms, and they were able to paint a very good picture of who's doing what. And how many foreclosures do we really have? Who's doing them? And then they went so far as to say, okay, now let's look at the property owners associations where you have the best appreciation in terms of property
That's
values.
Right. Yeah, they did a grand job with that.
Yeah, because the explanation you always get is, well, we have to do these foreclosures to keep up our property values. Well, guess what? The places that are doing them aren't keeping up their property values, folks.
That's right. And if you guys want to see that, the website is www.hoadata.org. But, Frank, I have to point out that all of those foreclosures that they've got listed there are judicial foreclosures. They were not able to get a hold of the records for the non-judicial foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, because I went to the courthouse here in Fairfax County, and the only way you can do that is if you have an address.
Yeah.
And then you can go and look it up by address. So you can't go in and say, give me a list of all the foreclosures. You're not going to get it.
No. Well, you can look. It seems to be that the Washington Times is the newspaper of choice for publishing the required notice of intent to foreclose. If you live in, here in Northern Virginia, pick up the Washington Times and you'll read which properties are being foreclosed on, and you'll see the names of law firms that are behind this, and it will have the date of the foreclosure action, and you can actually go to the courthouse steps. And I'd recommend you bring a little movie camera with you, and you can make your own record.
A film clip.
It sure would be fun to see if the same people show up at foreclosure after foreclosure, and after a while we'll be able to put names with faces and we'll see who's really making a buck off this.
In Houston, I think it's one day a month. It's the second Tuesday of the month that they have they hold the foreclosures. But I think in Fairfax County they do it just about any time they want to do it.
Yeah.
Unless you want to camp out and just start taking movies.
No, but you can find out when it's going to be because they have to put the date in the
paper.
Yeah, in the paper. This house is going to be sold on Christmas Eve or something.
Lovely.
And, yes.
Merry Christmas. Did you have anything else you over there that you wanted to?
Yeah, let's go back to one other point that Pia made that deserves more of a response than we gave it when we were here with her. We were talking about the powers of associations, and I pointed out, as I usually do, this is power of non-judicial foreclosure to collect the fine. And I said, not even your real government, has that kind of power to sell your house, by non-judicial foreclosure to collect money that the government says you owe. And Pia came back with, well, your bank can foreclose on you. Well, it's kind of like, the little Johnny has a pony argument, property owners associations, homeowners associations. If they find out that anybody else has any kind of power, they want to have that power. The distinction between banks and homeowners associations is, the bank says you owe them money. The only issue is, did you send the money in or not? I mean, if you have a mortgage
That's
payment
right.
and you don't make the mortgage
That's
payment,
right.
the issue is, do you have a mortgage?
Yeah.
And if so, did you make the payment? Well, we have all kinds of spin-off issues when you're talking about a homeowners association in the context of a fine. It's not just in, you know, you signed up to send them $200 a month as a regular assessment. Now they've enacted a rule. You know, your house has to be painted this, you know, a certain shade of beige. And, you know, you're a half shade off, therefore, you're going to be fined.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You know, number one, did you have the authority under the governing documents and law to enact that rule about, you know, certain shades of beige? I don't think you did. Secondly, I don't think you have the authority to fine me. There's all kinds of issues other than did you send in your check for the regular mortgage payment or the regular assessment payment once you get into this area of homeowner discipline, as they call it.
Yeah, well, they can. I mean, they're coming up with some of the wackiest things: cracked flower pots,
unpolished doorknobs,
Yes. And they're finding.
You guys think that we're making this up, and
we're not. We really are not. Frank, I can't believe that we're almost out of time. We've got a couple of minutes here, but we're going to have to make room for Curtis, who's standing behind me, waiting to go on. If you have a homeowner who's received a past due notice from the attorney, any thoughts, any recommendations on what to do?
Well, if it's a past due notice for a regular assessment, pay it. And when you pay it, make sure you put on the memo portion of your check that you're paying your regular assessment. If there's an interest fee that's, you know, that they're empowered to pay under the governing documents, pay the interest fee. Be careful about paying late fees because, as we've seen, Sue, homeowners associations will sometimes just decide that they want to be able to charge late fees without any authority in the governing documents to do that. And these late fees would never pass muster under the under the laws, you know, for charging excessive interest. The other thing you want to do is you want to make sure that your assessments are applied as you instruct them, as you instruct the association to apply them. It's supposed to go for regular assessments.
Go back,
put it in
check.
The memo line so that they don't apply them to legal fees or something else.
But go back and check because not all of them have either know that they're supposed to do that. Or we'll honor it, thinking that you won't be able to find out. So that's Frank. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming in. This was our annual St. Patrick's Day show, and as always, we've learned a whole lot from you. But thanks for hanging out with us out there on the Commons today. Please join us. Stay tuned and stay free. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
A nation once again.